Hi everyone and welcome to the fifth episode of the Cancer Researcher podcast from the European Association for Cancer Research. In this episode, Building Networks, we will discuss the importance of networking in research and our guest will share with you tips on how to improve your networking skills. I am your host, Dr. Alexandra Bojtor, Scientific Officer at the EACR and a former early career researcher myself. And my guests for this episode are Dr. Hege Rasnes, professor at the University of Oslo, her group being based at the Institute for Cancer Research at Oslo University Hospital, and Dr. Lisa Hoffmann-Haas, senior editor at Nature Cancer, based in the Berlin office.
Thank you for joining us for another EACR podcast episode. I'm here with Dr. Lisa Hoffmann-Haas.
Hi.
And Dr. Hege Rasnes.
Hello.
And we're planning on discussing networking in the scientific community. I believe we all agree that networking is incredibly important for successful career progression. The problem is that it's often difficult to know where to start. And I believe the most obvious choice for networking is conference participation. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think that's a very good point to meet people, especially now after COVID. We really see how important it is to meet people face to face. So yes, I think conferences and approaching them in a good way is very important for networking.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think the pandemic really made us realize what we miss if we can't go to conferences and interact in person.
Speaking about the COVID period, many conferences went offline around that time. Do you see any differences in the way that people network in the online environment and the in-person environment at conferences?
I mean, I generally think that, you know, Zoom conferences or the option to have conferences virtual or hybrid are great, especially for people who may not have the travel budget to go to really big conferences or people who have family obligations and maybe don't allow them to. So I think it's really important that we have noticed that this is a good thing to integrate. But I generally don't think that they can completely replace in-person conferences because the interactions you make in person are still very different. So I think in the end, we will probably in the future have a mix of both.
And I also think that post-conferences, virtual networking is very important to keep in touch and to keep the network active and get to know each other better. That's much easier if you have met physically. First, I've been to virtual conferences with breakout rooms, etc., but it's not that easy to actually interact or to build on later, in my opinion. So to start, if you want to meet new people and build a broader network or more transdisciplinary, I think being active and to plan well and being active on conferences is very important. For instance, I think it's very good for young researchers and students to have presentations, to have a poster, and to select conferences that might not be the biggest or they might be big with subsections. So you really hit the field of interest. So it's easy for you to interact because you know what to ask for. You know you're interested in the field. So select conferences that are within your field. Prepare a poster because that attracts people. And you can also discuss on other posters and this is very good to actually get to know people.
Speaking about poster presentations, I remember reading a blog post a while ago, which to me was a bit surprising, but maybe it's something that people should expect. So that blog post was suggesting that when you present your poster, you should not keep everything about your own research, but you should ask the people that are interested in your poster about their research and what attracted them to your poster to see whether there's a connection there.
Yeah, I totally agree on that.
Yeah, I also think it draws people in and makes the conversation more fluent. And I mean, you may actually also learn something for your own research that you didn't know about and that can be helpful.
When you go to a conference as a young researcher, do you think you should limit your conversations or your networking interactions to the people that are interested in your research? Or are there any tips that you could suggest, any like pre-conference research that someone could do in order to prepare to approach a certain person?
I have experienced many times earlier that I was not well prepared for what the speakers actually were going to talk about. You see their titles, but I did not know the person because I didn't know that much about the field. So to actually know more about what is this person's main interest, what has this person been working on, background, I think that's quite an important thing to do up front of conferences, because then you will really know, especially if it's parallel sessions, so you can pick the session that's best for you, but also that you know which people would you like to talk with, or which of their students would you be sure to see their posters from, etc. So I think preparing more than just reading the titles, if you're not very into research, if you're young, that's a tip.
Yeah, and I think preparing for conferences has also gotten maybe a bit easier with all of the, you know, apps that conferences have now, where you can even look up how do people look, so that you know whom to approach. And it's definitely good to look up what people work on before, as you said, more than just the title. So I would definitely also recommend doing some pre-conference research. And I think in terms of how to engage with people, I mean, it can be intimidating to walk up to someone that you've never met before. So I think especially if someone is really introvert, I would definitely recommend writing an email before and trying to arrange a meeting, because then it can be easier to make the connection if you have reached out before. So I, for example, work as an editor for a scientific journal at Nature Cancer. And I have to say that really, actually, I'm excited if people reach out before and we arrange a meeting, because it also gives me the opportunity to do some pre-conference research and look up what the people are working on and familiarize myself with the topic. And I think it may actually also make it easier for junior researchers to engage with me if they know we have a setup meeting where they can just meet me.
And on that note, apart from being approached with your own poster and visiting other colleagues' posters and sending emails in advance, do you have any other tips on how to start a conversation and maintain a conversation in a conference setting?
I think most seniors, people that you are a bit afraid to approach, if they have given a talk or a speech, many of them are very open for people waiting for them to just chat with them. Most senior speakers say they know they will be approached after their talk. So that's after the session. I think that's a good opportunity to just stand in line if there are several, or listen in with others. And I think it's important to be polite, to present yourself exactly as it is, your name and your position, student or researcher or editor or whatever. And then also say very directly why you are interested in talking to the person. I have never met persons that are not interested to talk to students. I know myself as a senior that I really like when students approach me, because they often have like a different way of seeing things, and they have questions that are often very good. I will encourage people just to approach in that way.
Yeah, I think in the end, you know, we are all scientists who are excited about science, and that's probably the most important thing to not forget and not be shy. Of course, being polite and things like that should always be considered. I've not had a single conversation at a conference where I felt someone was annoyed by me now coming up and asking a question.
And how could you make sure that you're also adding value to others whilst networking, to make sure that the interaction is not unilateral?
I think, like Lisa says, I think in the scientific community, you don't approach someone just to brag about your own work. You approach because you're interested in their work and interaction and questioning. So I think if you approach people or you try to build a network, it's because you want to have interaction and you want to have discussions. And discussion is what we like, all of us, I think. That's what we really have in common. Yeah, so asking questions, that's always interesting. I think no one is very interested if you just want to talk and talk and talk about your own stuff. Interaction is what we like, right? I don't know what you think, Lisa.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think it's always a, you know, give and take. And of course, when one is happy to talk about their own project, but then also talk about the work of other people. And I think sometimes really, if you come from a slightly different background or a different field, you know, people are maybe afraid to comment on something that they are not super familiar with. But I, for example, did my PhD at an institute where we had a lot of really basic biology, and I was always amazed how maybe the people that knew the least about cancer research could sometimes give me the best ideas because they had such a different viewpoint. So I think, you know, just not be afraid to give feedback, even if it may not be your field of expertise.
And you've mentioned that by all means, people should avoid bragging, which makes sense to me. But are there any other don'ts in like formal setting networking?
I think the biggest don't is just not to network, you know, to be shy at a conference and not use the opportunity and then maybe fly home and think, okay, I didn't make the most out of it. Because as we've already discussed, every one of us just, you know, loves to discuss. And I think that's what we should do.
When I was a student and a junior, the best conferences or conference experience in networking I had was those where I traveled by myself. I didn't go with a group from the institute I was doing my research on. Because then you're all by yourself. So if you have dinners, etc., you have to sit with someone else, conference dinners. So I'm very particular with my research group also to encourage that if you go as a group, don't behave as a group. Spread out and mingle with people. You don't need to sit together or you eat together or do everything together because you do that every day. You need to do it with other people. So I think a danger in conferences, if you want to build network, is that you just stick to the safe people that you know. You're in your safe zone socially. But I think networking takes a lot of energy to actually approach people, ask, talk. But that's part of what you should do. And you can rest when you get back home.
And I think many conferences also offer opportunities, you know, like career roundtables or meet the editor sessions or conference dinners. And I think I would definitely also recommend people to use these opportunities to meet new colleagues.
I understand that going alone at the conference would definitely increase the amount of networking that you're doing. But is there maybe a possibility that if you're going with someone else, like for instance with your supervisor, maybe you would be introduced to the right person?
Absolutely.
Or people that are more likely to be of help to you?
Yeah, I've been very fortunate that way myself to be introduced to people that I might not dare to approach that easily when I was young by my mentor or other seniors I was traveling with. So of course, that's very, and that is also very important if you try to email people up front. They answer you more easily if they know which group you are from or if there is some connection. At least my experience is that you will more easily get a positive answer from them because some people get overloaded with emails and don't respond when they don't know anything. So I've also had like my mentor have been emailing someone senior up front to meet me if I was going to a conference, for instance. So to ask for senior help is also good.
And on a slightly different note, I was actually reading a paper that was highlighted, I think, in one of the Nature briefing emails that I received about how conference attendance actually increases an author's likelihood to be cited or the work of a certain author to be cited. Lisa, maybe you have a bit more insight on this, on how conferences can help you to get your work published or cited.
I mean, I think conferences are just a great opportunity to meet new collaborators, you know, who can maybe contribute to your publication by bringing in, you know, a set of patient samples that you were really looking for, but you couldn't find, or maybe a technique that no one in your lab is able to do. And of course, you know, if you have these additions to your study, actually your study may become more impactful. And that, of course, can then also result in more citations. So I don't think it's necessarily, you know, meeting people who then cite your work, but it's more like increasing the quality of your work, which then directly affects your citations as well. But of course, you know, also if you give talks and you present your work and you make it more visible to the audience, that will also, of course, result in more visibility.
And staying on this topic, can you think of other types of more formal networking opportunities that researchers could take advantage of? From the top of my mind would be lunches with speakers invited to give a talk at your workplace. Do you have any other examples?
So I'm from Norway, so we are, of course, a small country. And for me and many of my colleagues, we are very dependent on international collaborators, especially to introduce new technologies, that kind of things, because we're not so close to the huge companies or, yeah, just by how small we are. So for me, it's been very important to have shorter stays in other labs, just a week or two, maybe, to see if a collaboration could be fruitful, to just get some insight in how technology works, etc. So we use that a lot, that we send people for short stays to a potential collaborator, just to sort of a site visit, but also to learn. So that's one thing. And the other thing is, of course, to have longer research stay. That's very important for long-term networking, where you work in big international groups, where you will know people well that will spread out all over the world. So for at least here in Norway, abroad stays, short or long term, is very important to build a network.
On that note, the EACR has joined forces with Worldwide Cancer Research to provide travel fellowships of up to 3,000 euros to enable early career cancer researchers to gain new skills through a short-term visit to a lab or research group in another country. If you're interested and would like to find out more, please visit www.eacr.org/travel-fellowships.
Yeah, so as editors, we actually also do site visits. So it's really similar for us. I think it's also a really great networking opportunity. So we also, for example, go to institutes and then meet with the different researchers that work there and discuss their work. For example, there we also tend to give presentations where we present the journal and then, you know, have lunch sessions with PhD students and postdocs. So that, I think, are really good options as well. And I think something really big these days is, of course, again, virtual networking, right? Twitter, LinkedIn, ResearchGate, I think are all opportunities to connect as well, especially for people who may actually not attend too many conferences and maybe a bit more limited in their options.
I'm glad you mentioned that, actually. On my list was also whether we could discuss about social media for researchers and the importance of that. So I was wondering how, for instance, would you go about approaching someone on LinkedIn, someone you haven't met before?
That happens all the time. That's easy. So both LinkedIn or Twitter or other social media, if researchers are active there, I think that's just maybe even more easy than emails, actually, to just ask to connect first and then also send a message. I think in my experience, that's very easy to do.
And have you noticed a preference in the research community for a certain social media network?
Yeah, so that's a challenge, right? Yeah. I don't have an answer to that. And sometimes I feel this is very frustrating. I see LinkedIn have been a very sort of trusted place to be, but it's not been as dynamic as Twitter or easy to use as Twitter. But now I think this is really frustrating, actually, to not have a very good platform for researcher for quick and easy communication.
Or have you perhaps noticed maybe like geographical or generational preference for a certain social media network?
Absolutely. And some of my favorite collaborators or people I would like to collaborate, they are not on social media. So that's how it is. And also myself, how much time should I spend to disseminate on social media? It's a challenge, but we need to disseminate and we need to reach out as researchers. So I really want to do it, but I have periods that I cannot really be very active. It's too busy.
Speaking of making your work known on social media, Lisa, do you, for instance, notice that sharing work on social media has an impact on the number of views on a certain article or the number of citations?
I think it definitely does. So we as Nature Cancer, we use Twitter a lot to publicize our content. And I think it's really, really helpful because you get a lot of visibility. But I think it's actually, you know, sometimes even more helpful if the author themselves really publicizes on Twitter, because some authors make so much effort to make really, really good tutorials that describe the content of the story. So I think it's definitely a really good way to be visible.
And as you've mentioned, when we talk about social media and research, I think the first example that come to mind are Twitter and LinkedIn. But there were tentatives of developing social media for researchers, such as ResearchGate, for instance. And I'm sure there are others. Feel free to name them if you remember the name of others. Do you feel that has any sort of impact? Are they commonly used, or what's your opinion on that?
I mean, I definitely think that social media has a really big impact in networking. I mean, as it was just mentioned before, it's fun, sometimes easier to just write someone on Twitter, "Oh, I saw your tutorial, really nice story, you know, can we talk?" And then connect from there. So I do think it's a really important aspect.
And some journals have their own forums for authors to discuss, more like a networking platform that's associated with a certain journal. Is that something you use or would suggest researchers to use?
Yeah, so we, for example, have, you know, certain platforms that are maybe related to, let's say, cancer research. And I think these are also taken up really well. Yeah.
And on this subject of online networking, we were discussing at the beginning the difference between in-person and online conferences. And I was wondering whether you have any tips on how one could start a conversation in a virtual conference, because I think we can agree networking is a bit more challenging in the online setting.
I think it's very nice to be approached when people have a question that you can respond quite easily to, so you can understand what part of your scientific field is the person interested in. So it's very good to start like, "Oh, I saw the work you had in that journal. It's so fascinating with that phenomenon," for instance, that you have something that you just see that the person that approached you is someone that actually knows something about what you're doing and has an interest, scientific interest in talking with you. And from there, I think it's good to have an upfront idea. Why would you like to talk with this scientist or this researcher or student? But to start very simple, just to point out that I think that's the way, and you will easily feel, does he or she have time to talk with me now, or is this not of interest at all? So you need to come quite fast, say, "I am working on this and that in this group," or something like that, to show why are you approaching, what is your key question or key interest. So to have that prepared, have a key question or key interest prepared, so you can easily go into tempt the person to talk more with you.
And I think because you were also asking about virtual conferences, right? I think, I mean, in breakout rooms, this can work out, but also it doesn't always, right? Because sometimes maybe people don't actually switch to the room. So I think it can also just be a virtual conference, can also just be even a jumping pad to then just say, "Oh, I attended this conference. I heard your talk and I would have this and that question." And then a conversation can also arise afterwards.
Mm. And some conferences are very good at having a chat. So you can post a question in the chat with your name and you can have response later also. That's actually worked quite well. To dare to post a question is good. And some smaller conferences or meetings, you post your question and you're asked to say it out loud. That's also good. And use your camera. Show who you are. That's always the best.
Yeah, and don't forget to mention where you're from, the institute, so people would have a mean to contact you.
Exactly.
The scientific world really seems to be very connected, and the 6 degree of separation principle definitely seems to apply. There's a really interesting article about this, although it's rather old now. It was published in 2001 by Professor Mark Newman, a physicist from the Santa Fe Institute in New Mexico. So in his study, Professor Newman tested the 6 degrees of separation theory by looking at the authors of published papers in the biomedical research, physics, and computer sciences, and starting with the assumption that co-authors must know each other. He found out that it takes between 4 and 9 steps to connect any two random researchers. And similarly, Mario Coccia from the National Research Council in Italy in 2016 looked at how networking affects collaboration patterns between basic and applied sciences. Then a group of researchers from various universities from the US and Europe looked in 2018 at how networking affects the choice of a research problem to career trajectories and progress within a field. So I was wondering whether it would be too dramatic to say that networking could make or break someone's career at the end of the day.
I'm not sure if I would say it can break your career if you don't network, but I definitely think that it can make your career if you network. Because, you know, even as a PhD student or as a postdoc, you may just be exposed to completely different circles and you may end up having career transitions that you didn't even think about before just because of the people you met during networking.
I totally agree on that. And I think it was very interesting what you mentioned with how many steps you need to go through before you actually can collaborate. So there is limited how much projects you can have and how many you can have to fail, or collaboration you can have to fail. So my experience is that when I have a collaboration, I need to know something about who I'm collaborating with. So you actually need to do some, not only networking, but you need to get to know each other at a certain level. So you know that you put the same into the collaboration, same dedication, or you have the same goal or aim with how you will move forward. And then in the collaboration, what I've also learned is that you need to work quite closely when you collaborate across Atlantic or borders or even within an institute. You need to meet physically regularly, and I think we've been much better now to meet virtually, but regular meetings. So I think the networking part up front will show, do we connect as humans? Do we talk the same way? And with that, I mean scientifically. Can we understand each other? Can we actually both of us gain in working together, both groups or persons? So I think networking is part of that. Which persons or scientific groups do connect well? That's part of the networking. And that, I agree, it's not breaking your career, but it will make your career to network, find good constellations that will bring something fruitful for you and your collaborator. So that's part of why you network. I think network gives you a lot of insights, other ideas, but it's also to find collaborators where you can pursue common scientific interests.
Thank you very much for your answers. So I have one last question for you. Through the perspective of networking, since this is the topic for today, if you could give only one piece of advice to your younger self, what would that be?
To me, it would be more brave and just approach people, talk with people, connect, contact, and don't be intimidated by a rejection or refusal or nobody answering emails. Just continue, approach, be open.
Yeah, I think I would have said exactly the same. Don't miss the opportunity. You know, as you said, maybe you go to a conference in your circle of your colleagues and then you end up not talking to too many other people because you are more comfortable in your own circle. So I think really, you know, force yourself to go out there and connect, I think is what I would tell myself.
Thank you very much for your answers. And thank you for joining me today for this wonderful conversation. I'm going to review the way that I network. And I hope this helped our listeners at least as much as I feel it helped me. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
We really hope that you enjoyed listening to Hege's and Lisa's advice inspired by their own experiences as senior researcher and senior editor respectively, but also as once PhD students at the beginning of their careers. I would like to once again thank our guests for being here with me today, and many thanks to everyone who listened. We will be taking a short summer break, but I can assure you we are working on new and exciting content that we can't wait to share with you. Spoiler alert, we will soon continue the conversation on research funding we started in our previous episode. So if you haven't already done so, please subscribe to our podcast so you wouldn't miss an episode. You can find the Cancer Researcher podcast on Spotify and on Apple Podcasts. Please do us a favor and tell your friends as well. You can give us feedback or offer suggestions for other topics or preferred guests through our feedback form that you can find on our website at www.eacr.org/podcast. That's www.eacr.org. eacr.org/podcast. And don't forget that you can also find us on Twitter at EACR News, Instagram at Hello EACR, and you can search for us on Facebook and LinkedIn.